Welcome to the show, Sadhguru, and thank you for being here with us. Let me begin with one basic question. From Jagdish Vasudev to Jaggi to Sadhguru, how and why Sadhguru?
I don't choose that, people. When they found that I'm completely uneducated and still I'm able to guide them, they call me Sadhguru because that's what it means.
What would you have liked to be called?
I don't like to be called anything. Sadhguru is not a title, it's a description. So I think the description fits me okay. So I let it be.
If you had a choice?
I don't waste time thinking about such things. What would people like to call me? What would they think about me? People ask me, what would be your legacy? I don't think about such things.
I was going to ask you, what would be your legacy?
I have enough to do on my hands. I don't waste my time thinking about what will people think about me after I'm dead. I hope they don't think about me at all.
But legacy?
My legacy is, if nobody thinks about me, that means they're doing very well. That's my legacy.
Why do you say that?
That's the whole idea. My life is about that, so that they do well. If all of them are doing fantastic, they won't have much time to think about me, and that's a good legacy. If they're pining about me, that means they're not doing well.
You are an inspiration. So wouldn't you like people to continue getting inspired by you?
Well, if you're only watching the YouTube, you may think I'm an inspiration. Maybe at that level, yes, I am. But the important thing is, for most people, I'm a solution to their life. So if a solution works, then you don't need the person anymore.
Isn't that a very selfish way to life?
What is selfish about? If you have a problem, you take a tablet. If it goes away, you still keep taking the tablet. Similarly, you needed a guru, he guided you, it worked. You forgot about it, it's fine.
But I thought the principle of devotees is really to continue getting inspired and guiding and leading life.
What will you go on getting inspired and inspire you? Once you're inspired, you must act. If you act, something must work. So I'm saying if it works, then there's no need for a guru and it's fine.
Looking back at life, your formative years and later, what are the moments you treasure? What are the moments which you would like to forget? And please don't say, my life is an open book.
Definitely, my life is not a book. It won't fit into your book, for sure. It is either open or closed book. It's not a book. See, this may sound like I'm being difficult with you. I'm not. It's very difficult for people to understand this. That if I sit somewhere for 3 days, I won't have a single thought. So I don't treasure any moments in my life. Well, if somebody reminds me, yes, there are many pleasant moments, and I would say I did not look at life as pleasant and unpleasant. I only looked at life as some things which made a difference, some things which did not make much of a difference. But I never saw life as this is pleasant, this is unpleasant. Because I made sure I'm pleasant. Situations come and go in so many different ways.
You've said, and I quote you, people are guru shopping today and a guru is a device. Just explain this to me because I'm completely confused.
Confusion is better than, very silly conclusions that people always make. Confusion means you're still looking. That's a good way to be. See, you don't look for a guru. If you realize that you do not know something fundamental about your own life, if the longing becomes deep, a guru will find you. In what form, how, it doesn't matter. In some form. So when you shop for a guru, you will look for somebody that you like. Somebody that you like may not work for you. Because what will you like? You will like that which is comfortable for you. That may not be a solution at all.
Now I'm more confused.
Let me come. So when you have realized that fundamentals of life you actually do not know. When I do not know, or the pain of not knowing tears you, a guru will be there one way or the other. some form. So, as I said, the guru is a device. It's like a torchlight. You're not able to see that. If somebody flashes a light, you see it. What should you see? You should see what is there. If you see something other than what is there, that's called hallucination. So the basic purpose of a guru is to remove your hallucinations and make you see life just the way it is. It's very important you see life just the way it is. Only if you see it the way it is, can you navigate through life effortlessly. My work is just to make people see life just the way it is. When I say just the way it is, it's not just the factual aspect of life. The way life is too phenomenal. If you just even have a glimpse of it, forever you'll be enthralled by it. That's how it is. That is the nature of life. That is the phenomena of life. It's the greatest phenomena happening. And at least on this planet, you are the peak of that evolutionary product, that you are here and you have the highest level of perception, you have the probably the most profound, you know, ways of looking at things. Human being has this capacity to have a very vivid sense of memory and a fantastic sense of imagination. Because of this, our life experience is very rich. This richness need not be destroyed, but it's very important that your memory or your imagination does not cloud what is there right now. You see things just the way it is. Then you will navigate your life effortlessly. Otherwise, both your memory and imagination can make you feel all kinds of things which don't exist. See, if you look at people, all the sufferings that people go through, what is it that they are suffering? If you look at this, what happened 10 years ago, they still suffer. What happened 10 years ago, does it exist right now? No, they're just suffering their memory. What may happen day after tomorrow, they already suffer. They're suffering their imagination. This vivid sense of memory and fantastic sense of imagination is what sets us apart from every other creature. But these two fantastic faculties, most human beings suffer. So this is happening because one is not able to see life beyond their own psychological drama.
In fact, that was my next question about misery and suffering. Where does it fit in? Or are they just words?
See, there are only two kinds of things. One is physical pain, which is part of our survival process. If you did not have physical pain, most human beings do not even know how to preserve themselves. They would cut themselves into ribbons in the name of fashion. There's no pain in the body. They would pull out their intestines and swing it around like a bag.
This is a very interesting observation. Please tell me a little more about this.
I'm saying it's only because of pain people are in one piece. Otherwise, they'll cut themselves into pieces. See, if you're walking on the street, if a bicycle comes, people step back. Not out of humility, consequence of pain. If there was no pain, there would be a complete disaster. So pain is very good. Without it, most people won't have the sense to survive.
So pain rather than happiness?
No. But suffering is mentally manufactured. Pain is physical. Without it, you wouldn't know how to keep yourself in one piece. But suffering is a mental production. What kind of production depends on your imagination. Some people make elaborate productions, some people make simple productions. So essentially what it means is, your thought, your emotion, your intelligence doesn't work for you. It's working against you. That's what suffering means. Once your intelligence works against you, no power in the universe can do anything for you. You're finished. So once you're into misery of some kind, then you see, it looks like nothing matters. Flowers are blooming in the in the trees, doesn't matter. Fruits are falling from the trees, doesn't matter. Because your psychological drama has the power to overtake the cosmos. This little drama becomes bigger than the cosmos. Once you lost perspective like that, I think you're a natural disaster.
So Sadhguru, what is the way forward and what would you say is the formula for life, if you will allow me to use that word?
You want a formula for life? If life just had a formula, would it be worth living? The simple thing is just this. If you say everything just the way it is, navigating your way through life and having a real high of life are just child's play. What you gather can be yours, can never ever be you, isn't it?
Okay, I'm more and more confused.
Similarly, you have a body which you gathered over a period of time. It's yours, it's not you. What you call as your mind, it's yours, it's not you. Anything that you gather can belong to you, but cannot become you. Right now, that is the problem. It's all got mixed up. What is me? What is my body? What is my mind? What is my emotion? All mixed up. There is no clarity of what is what. So you're not seeing life just the way it is. So everything is a confusion. Everything is a problem. Once you made this one mistake, after that everything is a mistake.
Sadhguru, you have used the word inner engineering several times, and that seems to be the touchstone. Yoga and engineering, I'm not able to reconcile the two.
Yoga is engineering. See, Adi Yogi propounded the yogic system over 15,000 years ago. There has not been a single generation, a whole generation, never was ready to address their inner well-being in a scientific way. I would say the next generation would be far more willing to address their life in a scientific manner. So Adi Yogi's time is coming in future. It's yet to come. We need a generation of people who have a certain level of intellect which thinks logically and which will not buy fancy fairy tales from anybody. Only then they can pursue inner well-being in a scientific manner. I think that time is coming. You know, for example, in United States, about 28% of the population says no religion. My estimate is, what I foresee is, in another 35 years to 40 years time, 70% of the world's population will say no religion. Because you can't sell these childish stories continuously, they won't fly. So once there is no religion, the only way is either people will go for alcohol, drugs, or seek consciousness. Right now, we have a center in Harvard Medical School, Center for Consciousness. You know, in today's world, unless Harvard speaks, it's not true. So we have Harvard.
Now I think it's also, unless Sadhguru speaks, it's not true.
Not yet so, but to some
it'll
extent.
Happen.
Some extent. One important thing, because I'm talking about alcohol and drugs, it generates 70% more endocannabinoids than what happens in any normal person, which is higher than what happens in sexual orgasm or in extreme exercise, just by sitting and doing a few simple kriyas. So there is a wave of blissfulness within you. Your very chemistry is becoming blissful. Once you're like this, the need to drink alcohol, the need to take drugs, need to seek pleasure in the world or need to go to heaven is gone within you. Only if people are miserable, a better place somewhere else that you have not seen works. If people are living well here, why do they want to go somewhere else? So this whole idea of selling heaven to people is already collapsing. The idea of a better place than this has no buyers.
What evidence?
No, the evidence was never there. No buyers. The real estate in heaven has no buyers. In another 30, 40 years' time, 70% will not buy this story.
Is that why you, if I may again use the word debunk, heaven, the theory of heaven, and also religion, and say that India is kind of godless, or we are a godless society? It's something the BJP may not wish to hear, or the BJP followers may not wish to hear. But these are the two things.
I don't see why a political party comes into this debate at all, this discussion. The important thing is this. You obviously don't have any proof there is a better place than this somewhere else. Whoever says there is a better place than this, if that place was so much more beautiful than this place and everything was better there, why are they not gone, I'm asking? So that doesn't sell. I say this is a godless country because all the people whom we worship are people who walk this geography. They went through trials and tribulations like everybody else, much more than normal people. Well, if you, one iconic person is Rama, if you take him.
I was going to come to that.
His life is a serial disaster. Serial disaster. Born as a prince, coronated at the age of 19, then some situation, whatever. Then with his young wife, just married wife, he's, you know, sent to the forest. Well, in Ramanand Sagar's television shows, you may say forest means everything is beautiful, everywhere flowers, golden deers are hopping around. That's not how forest is. I've lived in jungles. If I went into jungles for 3-4 weeks and came home, even my mother wouldn't recognize me. From head to toe, I would be insect bitten, you know. Because that's how a jungle is. It's not a honeymoon place. Now, as if that was not enough, his wife gets kidnapped. Then fights, burns down a beautiful city, gets his wife back. Again, some politics. And he again has to send her to forest. You don't call this a successful story. But we bow down to him because no matter what life threw at him, he maintained his balance. He never became full of hatred or angst or anger. No matter what drama, he is balanced. That freedom we worship.
So what about this obsession with Ram and this frenzy over the Ram temple, which of course now is going to be inaugurated? Where do you find this? Isn't it then misplaced?
I don't know. I wouldn't use those words. They're very strong words, obsession, frenzy, all this. Because if somebody has to be an inspiration after 7,000-8,000 years, there must be some element there. And anyway, coming to the Ram temple, so Ram had a series of problems during his life. Even after thousands of years, he still has real estate issues. His real estate is not settled after thousands of years. So people who love him want to settle that real estate. I think it's settled, Supreme Court has settled it. So they want to build a temple. It is devotion. Why should it be termed as frenzy and obsession?
Is it, let me use another word, which again you will say is strong, isn't it divisive?
Why is it divisive?
Because it cuts across two communities. Yes. It's been a bloody tale. And by bloody, I mean a tale of blood, a tale of killings, a tale of riots.
See, right now, it looks like you're looking for juice. But if you want juice, you must go all the way back. What's happened in the last 800 years is the bloodiest tale that's ever happened in any part of the world ever. What happened to the Jews with Adolf Hitler? What happened to Native Americans with North America? What happened in Cambodia? All these things are nothing compared to what happened in India in these 800 years. And if you don't think that is bloody, and there is no any kind of remorse in people who committed those things, then just people want a small piece of real estate back for their astha. And that is divisive. Why is it divisive?
I mark that you're using the word real estate and not temple. Is that deliberate?
It is. It is real estate. But temple is built by devotees' hearts. The land is just real estate. But it's sacred for them because it is identified as a birthplace. And obviously there's no question mark whether there was a temple or not. It is not one temple. Thousands of temples were raised because that's the policy that it must be raised. And it will be raised in future also. If we don't protect it, it will be raised in future also. Even now in Pakistan, Bangladesh is happening. Why should it be divisive? Why can't everybody settle down to whatever nonsense they believe in and do their stuff?
You spoke about the past. You spoke about past wars. Do two wrongs make a right?
See, there are no two wrongs. It's just a request. These three icons, Shiva, Rama, Krishna. Thousands of temples have been demolished. Nobody's asking because it's impossible to refix the history and nobody thinks it can be. We can refix the history, nor is anybody interested. These three iconic places, they're asking for, why can't it be just offered without a fight? Where is a fight? and nobody is fighting. They're only going to the court. Court is not a fight. It's a legal process.
You spoke about Adi Yogi, and it is very beautifully sculpted. It's very, very beautiful. You know, it looks like stone, but I'm told it's done in steel.
It took 2.5 years for me to design that. This is a very unique way of doing, and it's a very inexpensive way of doing. If you want to build a statue of that size, if you want to mold it, which is how most statues are done, it would be 10 to 12 times more expensive. This we did with small patches of steel. This is painstaking work, but it turns out 10% of the cost. But it's a lot of work. Only people who are crazy wanting to create that can do it. Commercially, you can't do it. Day and night, we worked on that to make that happen.
Sadhguru, I want to ask you another thing. You know, lots of gurus have, and lots of the ashrams have negative connotations. There's been financial scams. They've been...
Really?
Well, a lot of them, I will not name them. Some have even gone to jail for murder, for instance. How is it that you remain only popular? And of course, there have been set of controversies which the Isha Foundation has sufficiently explained. How is it, and how do they get all this become so infamous to the extent of giving a kind of bad name to this whole gurudom or whatever you'd like to call it?
In my estimate today, there are over 8,000 to 10,000 ashrams around the country. Plus another probably 800 to 1,000 reasonably prominent mutts, which are more religious in nature. Of all this, 2 or 3 people have been convicted for something. So will you paint everybody with the same thing? Well, I don't say some people have been convicted. Courts have convicted, so there must be some substance for that. But daily accusations we face because those 2-3 people did something, or simply because there are vested interests who are at it all the time.
Yet another point is, can there be smoke without fire?
See, if you do puja also, there will be smoke. If you do cooking in the kitchen also, there will be smoke. If there is cremation also, there is smoke. If you don't know the difference between one smoke and another, I'm sorry.
There is so much people know about you, and there is, you know, really, you're like an open book. What is it and which is that Sadhguru which people do not know?
They don't know a damn thing.
So tell me a little.
It is not something I can tell you in words, then you will misunderstand like everybody else. It is only something that I transmit. Those who sit with me quietly, they know something. Being inspired endlessly, what does it mean? It means nothing.
You have never prayed in your life or gone to a temple? Or have you gone, and when did you stop going? And have you read the scriptures?
I've definitely not read the scriptures. I'm not a temple-going person. I've built temples. See, our temples are not places of prayer. This is something that people have completely missed. In Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, if you go to your temple, nobody told you you must pray, you must appeal to the God and this and that. If you go there, you must sit quietly in one place, because these are different types of energies. Consecrations are of different types. Each deity is consecrated in a certain way to open certain dimensions of your life. So you are supposed to sit there and imbibe that. Even in North, they only told you to have darshan, not have appeal, isn't it? Darshan means, because it's an energetic form, you take that impression into your mind and your heart. This will transform you. Because it's an energetic form, the physical form is just like a scaffolding. It is there, it is necessary for the visual apparatus, but it's the energetic form. You're supposed to imbibe it. Because in this civilization that you refer to as Hindu right now, which unfortunately has been so badly distorted, or let's say probably more appropriate word would be Sanatan, but that also has become a bad word today. So in this culture, nothing can be eternal unless it's all-inclusive. In this culture, there is no such thing as prayer. In this culture, there is darshan. In this culture, the aspiration is to not to go to heaven and sit with God. In this culture, the aspiration is to become divine. See, for example, Many people, even in newspapers, it's being written, Tendulkar is cricketing God. Because in people's mind, at least during his time, it's still so, whatever we thought was humanly possible, he rose beyond that, just hitting a damn ball, that's all.
People say Sadhguru is God. Your followers say Sadhguru is God.
No, nobody says that. They put me to work every day. So, when they say he is God, they're not saying he lives in heaven or some nonsense. They are saying he's risen above what we think is human ceiling. He's risen above that. This is how we worship Rama, Krishna, everybody. They rose beyond their limitations, no matter what life throws at them. Even in a battlefield, they're cool. Even in a battlefield, he's joking. So we bow down to him and everybody's terrified of life and death. Somebody is above that, means we'll bow down to him. So in this culture, we are not wanting to go to God. We want to become that.
You recently had a G20, a huge G20 event here at the ashram. What is that one message to all the world leaders which you would like to give?
See, G20 means, in a way, the top 20 nations. When we say top 20 nations, top 20 economically powerful nations. Well, why they are important is if they make up their minds, they can change the whole world. All this violence that you're talking about, wars that you're talking about, this can be changed only if these 20 people make up their minds. They've still not made up their minds. Some of us are striving, but they've not made up their minds. Everybody's pushing their own agendas, going on nonstop. These 20 people, if they come to their senses, if they really wake up, they can change the world. So it's a huge possibility. So it's fantastic. For the first time, for G20, India has given a byline, one earth, one family, one future. If everybody imbibes this much, we are one earth, we are like one family, at least the science, biology says we are all one species, and one future. If we think of one future, there is a way.
Would you credit Prime Minister Narendra Modi's leadership for that one earth line?
I think that language has only come after he's come to power. Otherwise, that language was not there.
Who admires whom, or is it a mutual admiration society?
See, I'm not a fan of any individual or a party or anything. I think a few months ago, I was just driving into the school and children come up to me and say, Sadhguru, are you a BJP supporter? I said, 2/3, I'm 100% with BJP. What do you mean by 2/3? I said, Bharatiya Janata, absolutely. Party, no. Party is not my way. So, in the sense of, see, I rate human beings for their dedication, for their competence, and the intent of what they're trying to do. In that sense, I think you have to rate Narendra Modi as, well, you know, really high in the world leaders. Everybody is rating him as number one. I'm meeting a lot of congressmen in the US. They're all agog about him. You don't know. They're all like totally mesmerized by him. And they're saying, this is the man of the moment. This is American politicians who are talking. Arab countries are saying such things. France, European countries are saying such things. It's not for nothing.
Would you agree with that perception of the world?
I think so, yes. I would agree. I would endorse that because I'm looking at the clarity of vision, strategic understanding of where India should stand, economic growth. But have they managed to fix everything? No, I have a list of complaints.
Can you share a few?
I can. I have a list of complaints against the government. But that doesn't bring the Prime Minister down in any way because it's the intent and what you're trying to do with the country. All the problems will be solved tomorrow morning, then you're living in a dream. You're not in reality because this is a complex nation with a variety of problems. But how to harness the possibilities and put the problems to sleep. You can't get rid of them. At least put them to sleep for some time. I think that effort is going on in a big way.
So just list three complaints to me, which you have with the government.
One thing is the Hindu temples are in the hands of the government. Government clerks are doing puja. Most of the places, they're not doing puja at all because they're government employees. Where there is a devotee, there can't be a temple. First thing, they must change that. They have not changed that in 9 years. I don't like that. And they have not done anything about education. I have been writing to them. They made some education policy, which is slightly small improvement on things. But education policy needs a real overhaul. Intent is there. I have spoken to many people in the government and everything. Intent is there. But the volume of effort it takes, I think that effort has still not happened. The third is, I think it's been reasonably addressed now, but not fully. India's agriculture and soil has been a serious concern. India's soil is in a super bad state. But now they're making those changes. So if they fix it in the next 10 to 12 years, 67% of India's soil will turn around. It is moving in the direction, but I feel we need desperate action. I'm not unhappy with what they're doing, but even if you are on the right track, if you sit there for too long, you'll get run over.